There is any? There is one. I think everybody else has a lot of work to do too. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Chaivam Narotamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Dato Jayamudirayet Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Utamashloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. We're reading from the 4th canto, 12th chapter, 30th text, translations and purports from the Srimad Bhagavatam by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Tadotana pada. Tadotana pada. Putro. Tadarshantakam Agatam Mrityor Murni Padam Datva Arurohat Bhutam Griham Tadotanapadaputro Tadotanapadaputro Tadarshantakamagatam Mrityor murni padam tattva Arurohadbhutam griham. Then, Uttanapada of King Uttanapada, Putra, son, Darsha, could see, Antakam, death personified, Agatam, approached him, Mrityor Murni, Dattva, placing, Aruroha, got up. Adbhutam, wonderful. Griham, on the airplane, which resembled a big house. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. When Dhruva Maharaj was attempting to get on the transcendental plane, he saw death personified approach him. Not caring for death, however, he took advantage of the opportunity to put his feet on the head of death. And thus he got up on the airplane, which was as big as a house. Responsibly, when Dhruva Maharaj was attempting to get on the transcendental plane, he saw death personified approach him. Not caring for death, however, he took advantage of the opportunity to put his feet on the head of death. And thus he got up on the airplane, which was as big as a house. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. To take the passing away of a devotee and the passing away of a non-devotee as one and the same is completely misleading. While ascending the transcendental airplane, Dhruva Maharaj suddenly saw death personified before him, but he was not afraid. Instead of death giving him trouble, Dhruva Maharaj took advantage of death's presence and put his feet on the head of death. People with a poor fund of knowledge do not know the difference between the death of a devotee and the death of a non-devotee. In this connection, an example can be given. A cat carries its kittens in its mouth, and it also carries a rat in its mouth. Superficially, the catching of the rat and the kitten appear to be one and the same, but actually they are not. When the cat catches the rat in its mouth, it means death for the rat. Whereas when the cat catches the kitten enjoys it. When Dhruva Maharaj boarded the airplane, he took advantage of the arrival of Death Personified, who came to offer him obeisances. Putting his feet on the head of Death, he got up on the unique airplane, which is described here to be as big as a house, Griham. There are many other similar instances in the Bhagavatam literature. It is stated that when Kardama Muni created an airplane to carry his wife, Devahuti, all over the universe, the airplane was like a big city, carrying many houses, lakes, and gardens. Modern scientists have manufactured big airplanes, but they are packed with passengers who experience all sorts of discomforts while riding in them. Sounds like the laugh of a well-seasoned air traveler there. Material scientists are not even perfect in manifesting a material airplane. In order to compare to the plane used by Kardama, or the plane sent from Vishnuloka, they must manufacture an airplane equipped like a big city, with all the comforts of life, lakes, gardens, parks, etc. Their plane must be able to fly in outer space and hover and visit all other planets. If they invent such a plane, they will have to make a different space station for fuel to travel into outer space. Such a plane would have an unlimited supply of fuel, or, like the plane from Vishnuloka, would fly without it. Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam. This reminded me of Prabhupada's initial publication when he came to the West, his flagship publication, you might say, Easy Journey to Other Planets. He had a very brilliant marketing scheme, we might say, because the Americans were very worried about the Russians getting into outer space before them. So he named his book Easy Journey to Other Planets, knowing that the people of America were very much concerned with space travel. It's very much on their minds. And of course, the book doesn't really say very much about traveling to other planets. There's a little bit in the beginning. But that was the name of the book, Easy Journey to Other Planets. Also, if you get a chance, if you haven't, I would recommend you read Alien Identities by Sadafuta Das. He talks quite extensively there about different types of airplanes, Vimanas, known in Vedic literature, and how there are different types, different classifications. Prabhupada's alluding to them here. There are some that fly without fuel. This is called a unique airplane. There are the swan airplanes. Lord Brahma has it, sometimes come from Vishnuloka. Garuda is a sort of an airplane. And there are the flower airplanes, the Pushpa airplanes, like the one that Lord Ram and Sita and Lakshman came back on when they came back to Ayodhya. So it's actually very wonderful to hear about these descriptions and to see how feeble and futile are the attempts of modern scientists to make very comfortable airplanes. They're, as Prabhupada says, they're always packed and very inconvenient. I happened to think of this. I was on a flight, and somebody right across the aisle was just freaking out because air sickness or something. So they have all kinds of things, the people, the flight attendants that work on the planes, to give them. They put a little cotton swab behind the ear, and that takes away air sickness, and then they've got something else that takes away headache. They carry aspirin with them and so on. So they're pretty uncomfortable. Most people kind of read a book, but it's I think most of the passengers are pretty tense, aren't they, when they're worried about being 40,000 feet up in the air and being held up there by a little piece of tin. It's not exactly very comforting. So Prabhupada is talking about the death experience and the difference between death for a devotee and death for a non-devotee, and says that there's a great difference. We shouldn't compare the two. And he gives this very poetic, beautiful example about the cat and the rat and the cat and the kitten, how the kitten feels the jaws of the hot breath of the cat is death, and the kitten feels the warm breath of the cat is the affectionate embrace of its mother. So this is a very symbolic thing, that death personified turns up at the time of Maharaj Dhruva's. Dhruva Maharaj is stepping onto this airplane. He doesn't show up too much in Vedic literature. He's known as Mrityu, with a capital M, death personified. So this is symbolic, of course, in the sense that the devotee doesn't fear death, and also in the sense that because he's taking the foot of Dhruva on his head, he's offering obeisances. So in that way, death has to surrender to the devotee. Of course, Krishna says that death, I am destroyer of worlds. We know that death is ultimately personified in the original form of Krishna, and that sometimes he says Kala too, I am time, destroyer of worlds. But a devotee doesn't fear death, and this is actually the difference between one who is on the transcendental path or one who is fixed in devotion. There's the story that Prabhupada narrates about the different people who went to get benedictions from the wise man. And when the brahmachari went to him, he said, you can live or die, it doesn't matter. The butcher couldn't live or die, because if he lived, he would suffer, and if he died, he would suffer. And then there were different people. But this was the advice of one who was fixed. Actually, the brahmachari said, you can die now. That's what he said, because you're fixed. Later on, you may not be strict in your vows. And the one who was very advanced, the yogi or the sage, said, you can live or die, it doesn't matter. So for one who is on the path of devotional service, death is a transition to a better reality. And it doesn't necessarily mean the end of everything. And for a devotee, it doesn't mean the end of anything. It means the beginning. Whereas death for the non-devotee is the end of everything. And it is the greatest fear. Sometimes those who are on the transcendental path almost enjoy, almost like the idea of transiting on to another birth, because the body, after all, it has to wear out, and it becomes a bit difficult and useless at a certain point. So when your car gets old, it's time to get a new one. That's the attitude of the transcendentalist. Get an old body, it's becoming feeble and useless, so get another one. There was a time when we were in Prabhupada's room when he was very ill, and he was obviously thinking about departing. He was in Stinson Beach, and he'd had this stroke, and he'd come back from New York, and he was spending most of the day just gazing at this painting that Jadarani had painted of Radha and Krishna, and just for hours and hours. And one time we went into his room, and he was looking at the picture, sitting on his bed, and we sat on the floor and said, the natural thing to say is, how do you feel? You know, it's just kind of unconscious, how are you, how do you feel? So somehow someone said that. And Prabhupada was looking at this picture, and he was just so absorbed that he didn't even answer for a while. And finally he looked down at the devotees with this almost incredulous look, and he said, what is this body? And he turned around and looked at the picture again. And we could understand from that actually he was completely unattached to the body. It was just not in his idea about how is he feeling, or, you know, whether there's some pain in the head or the ear or some stroke. It just was completely absent from his consciousness. He somehow was brought down to this mundane level by our question, how do you feel? And then what is this body? So we not only learn something from ourselves, but also about Prabhupada. It was clear that he was completely unattached to his body. So as Prabhupada mentions, there are many instances about the passing of devotees in the Bhagavatam. One, of course, the famous one is Bhishma, when he was given a benediction that he could die at will. But he also exemplified being very detached. It's described that when a coconut in the Bhagavatam is mature or very ripe or overripe, the inside shell, the inside meat of the coconut, it's called, falls away from the shell, and you can shake it around and it rattles. And this is an example given to explain that one should be detached, that the living entity should be detached from the body. One should not be detached to think, I am this body. Nijayate mriyate vakadachim, it says in the Bhagavatam. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death. So if there's no death, one can become detached, like Bhishma, who is as detached as the inside of the coconut. And not only was he detached, but when he was visited by great sages and rishis and great personalities from his own family, who were also great souls, and from all over the world and all over the universe, he was very composed. He spoke very purely and perfectly. He greeted each and every person exactly according to the situation, to the time, place, and circumstance, and made everybody feel very comfortable, even though he himself was obviously in an extremely uncomfortable position. He spoke with complete composure and made everybody forget the fact that he was riddled with arrows and all his blood had drained out. He just made them feel very comfortable. In fact, there's an instance described in the Mahabharata that while he was lying in the bed of Eros, he happened to notice out of the corner of his eyes that Draupadi, who was present, was smiling sardonically, kind of. And he asked her, because it was so unusual, why are you smiling at a time like this? What's so funny? And she said, I was just thinking of the irony that existed when I was being denuded by the Kauravas. They were tearing my clothes off, and you just sat there, and you didn't do anything. You didn't move. You didn't make any effort to save me. So I was just thinking this was a little strange. And he said, yes, that's a very good question. When I was in their company, and I was obliged to them because of them being family members, I was also taking all the food that they offered. And this food contaminated my consciousness. And so I made many mistakes. But now, since I have been wounded with so many arrows, actually all the blood has drained out of my body. And now I think that I can speak religious principles because I'm relieved of that contamination. So that satisfied her. And he addressed Krishna as Partasarathi because he had that chivalrous relationship with him. And each and every person was addressed so perfectly that they felt very comfortable, even in the presence of his imminent death of their great-grandfather, Bhishma Dev. Also, when Prabhupada was ill, he was another great Vaishnava who was composing perfectly the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. His purports are extremely deep and penetrating. It's impossible to imagine when you read them how much he wrote. The doctor said that an ordinary man would be crying out in agony. He was in such pain. But nevertheless, he wrote. And when he left his body, he was chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And of course, this was an example for everybody. Prabhupada set the example. He said to the disciples then, don't think this won't happen to you. So he set that example. For the materialist, this is a very frightening thing. But they see things differently. Yani sha sarvabhutanam yasyam jagrati samyami. For the materialist, everything is different from the way the spiritualist sees it. Everything is like the difference between night and day. Yani sha sarvabhutanam. And for the spiritualist, what is nighttime is like day for the materialist. So everything is reversed. The vision is different. The vision of life, the vision of death. All of the things that seem natural and necessary for ordinary existence, which is janma mrityu jarada yadi, that is birth, death, disease, and old age, are not natural for a devotee. One who's a devotee sees that things are eternal, that they last forever. They're not just temporary. Now, it's the Vedic custom that when there's a death, people perform different types of sacrifices. Once I had to perform a ceremony. Sometimes we were called upon as priests in the Hare Krishna movement. Ceremony. Sometimes we are called upon as priests in the Hare Krishna movement. I'm sure Dharmasetu said to do this, where there's a death in the family and you have to preside over a funeral. And one of the things I had to do was to put Ganges water in the mouth of the deceased. There was a big kirtan. The body was in a room, and there was a long ceremony in the home. So this is very common, and it's considered that if one's body or ashes are deposited in the Ganga, so one will attain to the lotus feet of Vishnu, because the river Ganga emanates from the toe of Lord Vishnu. So this is a very popular thing to dispose of bodies in this way. For devotees, we also do this very often, take their ashes and sprinkle them in the Ganga and recite the appropriate mantras. So this is a very, very common practice. Also, when Ravana left his body, there were funeral ceremonies, and the Shraddha ceremony is performed. I think Lord Chaitanya and Advaita performed ceremonies for Haridas Thakur. When Haridas Thakur died, it was a very glorious experience. Lord Chaitanya was dancing with his body, and there was a great, great celebration. Before I was a devotee, I remember seeing funerals in India, and I used to think, I was amazed. They were such joyful things. They were playing trumpets, and people were dancing and singing, and there was the body on what looked like a stretcher being carried around the city, and everybody, they were playing drums, and it was just the opposite of the typical lugubrious, really sad affairs of the weddings that we see in the West. What? I'm sorry. That wasn't some kind of psychological slip. There's a certain word, not Freudian, but there's a slip. And it didn't really mean it that way. Sometimes these things just sort of pop out, you know. So the glory of a devotee's death is something very special. I remember when Jayananda passed away also, Prabhupada said his death is glorious. It wasn't an ordinary death. He heard the circumstances under which he passed away, and it was, devotees were chanting. There was a tape of Prabhupada going. His ear was very close to the tape recorder. They had brought a garland in from Lord Jagannath, and had been speaking to him about Krishna all through the day and night before. And so Prabhupada said his death is glorious. And there's a celebration, not a sad affair, but a celebration. The Shraddha ceremony is performed so that the deceased will, one of the reasons is it will not become ghostly, that the soul will not be disembodied. This is considered very dangerous and very dreadful to be in this ghostly form. The ghost, of course, has all the different desires of a human being, but can't satisfy them because there's no organs, no physical body to satisfy those things. And therefore, out of anger or revenge or enviousness, they're said to be very envious, they sometimes try to inhabit someone else's body and drive the other soul away, frighten people to death, and create all kinds of difficulties because of enviousness. And sometimes they remain in these disembodied states for a long time. So part of the process is to relieve them from this ghostly body. Also, there's the desire to have them attain to the Pitriloka. There's a planet called Pitriloka, under which Aryama, a sort of demigod, Prabhupada calls him somewhat of a demigod, presides, so that he can remain there. But of course, nothing in this material world is permanent, so one cannot remain anywhere in this material world forever. Yanti Deva, Deva, what is it? Deva? Pitrinyanti Pitri Vrataha. He can go to Pitriloka and by worshipping the forefathers. So this is another type of ritual in which there's an impermanent result. Therefore, Shraddha is said to be necessary to keep offering so that he can stay up there. And it's kind of like an insurance policy, you know, you have to pay the premium every year. But the result is that there's no guarantee. In fact, it's guaranteed that one will not stay in such a situation. On the other hand, a devotee will be liberated if his son is a devotee, if her son is a devotee. According to the Bhagavatam, one's parents are liberated if one is a devotee. In fact, 10 generations back, in one place it said, in the 7th canto, some places it said 50 generations. Another place it says 100. Prabhupada's written in some letters 100 generations backwards through the ancestors and forward through the progeny, through the posterity, I think it's called. So this is the unique thing of being a devotee. And Maharaj Nimi states that one can do this because everyone is actually part and parcel of Krishna. Devarshi Bhutatva. Rinam Pitrinam. He says that we are obligated by nature, by the force of karma, we're obligated to fulfill certain things because we've been brought into this world by our ancestors. Devarshi Bhutapan Rinam Pitrinam. Nakinkaro Nayam Rini Charajam. Sarvatmanaya Sharanam Sharanyam. Gatomukundam Pariritya Kartam. We're obligated to the sages, to the great demigods, to our parents, to all the living beings, through the reason that we're here, through different types of reactions. And according to the laws of nature, the laws of karma, one has to fulfill obligations to all these different beings. But if one is a devotee, one is automatically taking care of all these obligations because everyone is a part and parcel of Krishna. Mamai vanso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Because everyone's a part and parcel of Krishna, anything done in pure devotional service satisfies Krishna. And through that satisfaction, he automatically fulfills all our obligations. Sarva kama krita hoy. Everything done in the service of Krishna is the solution to all of the problems. Or it's, as it's said in the Bhagavatam, if we water the root of the tree, then automatically the leaves and the twigs and the branches are fully nourished, while watering them separately won't actually nourish them. So similarly, if we fulfill these obligations separately without making Krishna at the center in the Karmakandiya style or in any other style, then the satisfaction of the obligation won't actually be fully discharged. It'll only be partially discharged, and complete satisfaction will not take place, just like trying to water the roots or the leaves and branches of a tree instead of the tree itself. In our time of being a society, we've seen some devotees have passed away, and these have been, in many cases, glorious experiences. Books, there's one devotee who recently passed away in Vrindavan, who Indra Dhunraj is writing a whole book about the extraordinary qualities of the person and the extraordinary situation in which this devotee passed away. And I think there was Mother Gauri, too, who is still being glorified as a great devotee. She was a great book distributor. So these aren't ordinary things, and they're very different from the passing away of a non-devotee. Actually, a devotee is glorified through all time, whereas one who is not a devotee is only temporarily glorified. For a little while they're remembered, then maybe they're written about, and then there are footnotes somewhere, and then they're just oblivion. But the glories of a devotee will transcend all time and space. A devotee will be glorified in the future forever, and throughout not only the world but the whole universe. Prabhupada once said to us that a devotee will be known everywhere. All over the world, a devotee will become famous. One knows that. Sometimes you travel around, you see that people are very interested, they're very kind. We have to go through so many customs sometimes and immigration. And there's something kind of transcendental looking about a devotee. Looks a little bit different, sort of otherworldly, as they say, not of this world. And that's actually the case. When one remembers one is not of this world, one doesn't fear death. It's inconceivable how one cannot fear death. I was just going to read a little passage in the story of King Puranjan later on in this canto, who experiences, he's the typical metaphorical example of the materialist, who is completely attached, who has no spiritual interest, and how old age and death come upon him. So this is a very poetic verse. Thus King Puranjan, this is in the fourth canto, 27th chapter, 13th verse, 12th verse. Being attached to fruit of activities, karmakandiya, as well as kith and kin, and being obsessed with polluted consciousness, eventually arrived at that point, not very much liked by those who are overtly attached to material things. So this is a bit of sarcasm in the Bhagavatam, not very much liked. It's the point that everybody is most fearful of and detests the most. It says not very much liked by those too attached to material things. In this verse, the words priya yoshitam and apriya means not very much liked, not very dear, are very significant. The word yoshit means woman, and priya means dear or pleasing. Death is not very much welcome for those who are too much attached to material enjoyment, which culminates in sex. There is an instructive story in this connection. Well, this is the story I already told, so I won't. This is the different blessings from the saint. King Puranjan finally arrived at that point of old age. In old age, the senses lose their strength, And although as an old man, and although an old man desires to enjoy his senses, and especially sex life, he's very miserable because his instruments of enjoyment no longer function. Such sensualists are never prepared for death. They simply want to live on and extend their life by so-called scientific advancement. Some foolish Russian scientist also claimed that they are going to make man immortal through scientific advancement. Under the leadership of such crazy fellows, civilization is going on. Cruel death, however, comes and takes all of them away, despite their desire to live forever. This type of mentality was exhibited by Hiranyakashipu. But when the time was ripe, the Lord personally killed him within a second. So Hiranyakashipu was extremely defiant of Lord Nrisimhadev, who was the personified death version of Lord Krishna. And even though he was very defiant and confident, still he had to meet his demise. So everyone is afraid, but will not admit it or mention it. But so many of the psychosis or neuroses and reasons people spend so much for the psychiatrist are due to this gnawing fear. When we were in Berry Place, it was the first London temple, one neighbor always used to complain about the noise. And he finally got his way once when one of his neighbors started to write petitions and get them signed by the neighbors. So this was one of our wise enemies rather than a foolish friend. He was very intelligent, and he organized this big campaign which eventually caused the devotees to have to leave this place. But we used to talk with him sometimes, philosophy, because he was very intelligent, and he actually appreciated our philosophy, even though he felt we shouldn't have been in his neighborhood because he didn't like the noise. But he was getting on in years, and in one of these conversations, we got onto this question of Janma Mrityu Jarada Vyadi, about birth and death. And he said that actually he confessed to us that he would almost every day wake up in the morning in a cold sweat, envisioning himself dying in all sorts of horrible different situations and circumstances. So we kind of thought about this afterwards, and it's the situation of many people. Of course, many aren't so honest, and they think that birth and death and suffering and old age is just part of life. It's all part of life's rich pageant, and we just have to learn to live with it and tolerate it, and that's the way it is. And if you're thinking that there's no such thing as death, or that you're going to escape these things and go to a place where everybody's happy and you're going to always smile and be happy, then you must be completely crazy. That's the version of the materialist. They just think that devotees must be out of it because they're just happy all the time, and they're trying to go back to this dream world which doesn't really exist. So this is the difference between the vision of death of a devotee and that of a non-devotee. The non-devotee is very fearful of it. It's the time when he's most frightened, and the devotee sees it as a transition to go back to Krishna Loka, or at least to get another start, to do more service for Krishna, to be more successful in serving the Lord, to serve the Vaishnavas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said he would prefer to be born in the home of a Vaishnava, even if he had to be an insect. He would, just so he could get the association of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. So we'll stop there. I'll read the verse. Tado ta napada putro tadarshan takam agatam tadarshan takam agatam mrityor mridni padam tatva arurohad bhutam griham. When Dhruva Maharaj was attempting to get on the transcendental plane, he saw death personified approach him. Not caring for death, however, he took advantage of the opportunity to put his feet on the head of death, and thus he got up on the airplane, which was as big as a house. So any comments or questions? Maybe they're very good at preserving bodies.
there's an art to doing this. The Egyptians also, they say that some of these, you know, mummies are, they're very, still very, they look very much alive. And of course, the bodies of saints, they're preserved too. They're buried rather than burned. So there may be some spiritual reason why I couldn't say. The soul generally leaves the body at the time of death. that's the standard procedure, and then takes birth somewhere else or hovers as a ghost. But it would be an exceptional. Maybe somebody else knows about Saint Francis. I don't know. As far as I know, the soul went somewhere else, but I'm not an expert on these things. Bob? Mantras are very powerful. They can manipulate the destination of a soul sometimes.
There are other examples of studies of yogis being buried for weeks at a time.
Yeah. One of the arts of the yogis is that they can slow down the breathing process so slowly that they can... They can stay underwater and so many things for long periods of time. So there's some people that do that, like demonstrations today, they can do things like that. Of course, the real yogis that are few that are left are usually in the Himalayas and they're sort of out of reach. Some are said to be 400, 500 years old. They don't interact with the world at large. Dharma? Yeah. Well, the liberation comes in a lot of different forms. Liberation can also be impermanent. In fact, liberation to Brahma Jyoti is said to be nye nye rabindaksha vimuktamani nasat. It's impermanent by necessity because it's incomplete realization. So there are different types. And when it was explained when Lord Chaitanya accommodated Vasudev's that desire to see the whole universe liberated, that the whole world was liberated. But we didn't understand, no one could actually understand how it happened because we didn't see anybody disappear. Nobody appeared to change body at the moment. So maybe it was going to happen in a future life or maybe it happened invisibly somehow. And he goes on to say how the souls all come back to the material. There's a continuous cycle of souls coming into the material world. He says that even if everyone's liberated from the material world, it fills up again with conditioned souls, like a prison house. You release all the prisoners and then, you know, because there's illegal activity, it fills back up again. So liberation, it can mean a lot of things. It's actually ultimately a chintya to know what that means. It's inconceivable. What kind of liberation? How long it's for? When it's going to take place? Just like the enemies of Krishna, they achieve a certain type of liberation. But it doesn't necessarily mean they go back and live with Krishna. Janma karma chumedi vyam in the spiritual sky never return to the material world. Even when Prahlad Maharaj was praying, which is where Prabhupada mentions this in the purports in the seventh canto, about his father being liberated, doesn't really say what kind of liberation Hiranyakashipu gets. It's just that he prayed for him for his liberation. Of course, it's good to be liberated, but it's not the ultimate. So, and liberation can mean going back to Godhead. It can mean that. It can be going back and living with Krishna. Or going to Vaikuntha. It said that dog who got Agyata Sukriti, who got the remnants from Lord Chaitanya's food, Shivananda Sena's friend, that he went to Vaikuntha, even though he didn't have any idea what it meant. But
Prabhupada makes an interesting comment there too, in that, in the purport to that section. He says that all members of ISKCON must become pure Vaishnavas so that everyone may get a chance to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and go back to Godhead. And then he goes on to say that everyone should at least be given the opportunity to have prasadam so that they can be induced to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and dance in ecstasy. So it's a little digression, but it's kind of interesting how he said give them prasadam first and then chant and then dance. But a lot of advancement can be made by Agyata Sukriti, obviously. And it can be a complete liberation back to the spiritual world. It can be. Gangaya?
Yeah, this talks about death personifying. Early on mentioned about Krishna's death. And one of the Vedas describes those. Ultimately, everything's caused by Krishna. But this personality that is there, is that like a
Well, it seems to manifest from time to time. Let's see if there was. I was reading about it the other day. I don't know if I can find it. There's a place where he's mentioned. It's in the chapter of Dhruva. It's actually in the story of Dhruva. Oh, all right. O greatest of all men, by the combination of Kali and Hara, speech was born. Let's see. O greatest of all good men, by the combination of Kali and Hara, speech were born. Children named Mrityu, death, and Bhiti, fear. Combination of Kali and Hara. Hara. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't see very well. My glasses. The word's harsh. HARSH. O greatest of all good men, by the combination of Kali and harsh speech were born children named Mrityu. So Mrityu was born of Kali, which is personified Kali, K-A-L-I, and harsh speech there also, HS, they're personifications. Exactly what these personifications are, it's a little hard to say. We're born children named Mrityu, death, and Bhiti, fear. From the combination of Mrityu and Bhiti came children named Yatana, excessive pain, and Niraya, hell. These are all capitalized. Like in, you know, English poetry, they capitalize words like wind with a capital W and different levels of the hierarchy of demigods in the Greek pantheon. They're also the seven Garbhasuras, Prabhupada calls them symbolic representations, even though they were born of Devaki, Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Mada, Moha, Matsarya. They're also called the symbolic representations of different Asuric principles, lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. So kind of it seems like they're symbolic, but they also have some existence. Like Kali, you don't really see him coming around very much, but in that one section, he's very much there. So it seems to be a combination of a kind of personification and some kind of a jiva, a symbolic representation and a jiva at the same time. Yes? If one sees that Krishna is the supreme being and that we're all completely dependent on Krishna, then one also sees that every atom is pervaded by Krishna, that every, even the blade of grass doesn't move without Krishna's sanction. So Krishna, knowing we're dependent on Krishna means that we also know Krishna is everywhere. There's no place that there's not Krishna. He exists inside the atom, outside the atom, and everywhere.
So that's one of the symptoms of surrender. One completely surrenders to Krishna. One of the symptoms of surrender is to know that Krishna is everywhere. And one can therefore be saved by Krishna because he's everywhere. He's in the hospital, he's in the disease, he's in the operating room. Krishna's there.
Can we say then that a transcendentalist, he sees everything as an extension of the Supreme Lord, and then he feels the presence of Krishna everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a materialist is always mano retena sati davato bahi. He's always engaged in the external service of the Lord. It's described in the Bhagavatam. He must be, because he's attached, because he harabhaktasya kutoma hadguna. He doesn't possess the good qualities, and therefore he's forced to engage in what's called the external service, or the service of Maya. That's his master. So that's the difference. Janavi? And just to get rid of the suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, the great souls, or any pure devotee, I suppose we can say, doesn't suffer in the same way. When Krishnadas Kaviraj was writing, he was saying that I don't know how I write. Krishna's writing through me, because he was suffering so much. He had so much rheumatism. He was standing up. He couldn't even sit down. And he was just... He couldn't imagine. He was praying constantly to Krishna, and he prays at the end of every chapter to the Goswamis, Upa Raghunath, that somehow just let the transcendental knowledge flow through me, because I'm not a fit vehicle. So even he was just, and he didn't want to pass away in that sense, because he wanted the work to go on, not because he wanted to get rid of the pain and suffering. And Prabhupada also, he writes about this in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, in the section of where he's instructing Sanatana Goswami, and he explains why he wrote Krishna book. He says, I wrote Krishna book because I'm practically invalid in my old age and due to rheumatism. So I wanted to write this book so that I could achieve something according to the orders of my... really want to die, because he wanted to continue his service. So for a devotee, there's that desire not to die, so that the service can be continued. But at the same time, they're thinking, when Krishna wants, a devotee thinks, when Krishna wants this body to end, it will have to end, and I accept that. And also, he's thinking that's, I accept that, he's peaceful with that thought, because after all, it's becoming an unsuitable vehicle, but not just to be relieved of the suffering.
How about the suffering of mind?
Of mind?
Yes,
from old age, you mean?
No, not from old age.
Oh, just the suffering.
Life in general.
Yeah. When I was in England, I remember there was a popular television, a radio program. It was called The Clitheroe Kid. It was about a young kid's adventures. So one day I happened to hear, I was on Oxford Street, and we heard on somebody's shop radio, we used to do Harinam up and down, I don't know, he had to go into the shop, and they were playing this, it's this little boy, it's got a real high voice, and he was having an argument with his mother, and he was really upset with her, and he said, Mom, I'm going to leave home, I'm just going to go out and join him on the street. And because the devotees were very popular then, because of their record, everybody knew that meant that he was going to go out and chant Hare Krishna with the devotees. I'm just going to go out and join him on the street and dance. So the desire of the materialist is just to sort of get rid of everything by either death or by suicide, just to falsely renounce it, to deny that anything can exist, because they think that by dying they'll get rid of everything. And what they don't know is that behind that wall, the Yamadutas are just waiting. Remember that picture in the Bhagavatam? On the deathbed, all the relatives are standing around. Someone with a macabre sense of humor wanted to send that as a sympathy card to someone they didn't like, who relatives, who someone who passed away.
They don't know that, and therefore they're thinking that this is going to be relief. So people commit suicide sometimes, or they just think, I want to die, and they just think that that's the end of the suffering. But actually, it's just the beginning. We know that it's just the beginning of a long course of suffering described in the fifth canon, which is a very frightening situation. So if they knew that, maybe that fear would be greater. The suffering of the mind is always existing. And as I was saying before, people pay handsome amounts to psychiatrists to get rid of the suffering, but it actually is just kind of, they need someone to talk to most of the time. They don't really get rid of it. I mean, the root of it is still there. Yeah, I want to just let the body go. Because there's so much devotional service one can do. And one can see different types of mental suffering. I mean, for a devotee, the devotee's meant to see it as a blessing from Krishna, that somehow I've got this kind of suffering so that I can think of Krishna more to relieve the suffering, that I can pray to Krishna to relieve this suffering. That's actually the devotee attitude, that I'm feeling depressed or I'm feeling left out, or different ways people suffer mentally, and that's to be seen somehow as an arrangement for me to remember Krishna more and pray more. Of course, that has a spiritual aspect too. I should suffer because I'm being separated from Krishna. Lord Chaitanya himself said that I feel a hypocrite because I have no love for Krishna. If I actually had love for Krishna, I would leave my body immediately. He said. Yes, you had a question?
Maharaj, over the years, I have heard descriptions of the days before Srila Prabhupada left his body, how he had requested his disciples to come to India. And there were arrangements made in Sakshiwalas and sometimes a festival celebration to recognize his time. And I had heard it was said that Prabhupada expressed his disappointment when very few showed up and said that, are my disciples able to catch something from me?
My disciples will what?
They will catch something from me. They're afraid they will get sick. Uh-huh. They come near me. Uh-huh. I was wondering if you could, I'm sure you were there at the time, if you could expound on that or confirm or deny his sentence.
Well, I wasn't there, and I never heard that before. Sorry. Maybe you were.
I think you're mixing two quotes. Specifically, from the GBC man, we were called, we feel the responsibility of the service is drawing them away. He made that comment. Why don't I see if you're afraid you're going to catch something like that?
Uh huh.
Just in reference.
He was disappointed that.
It's not neglecting the validity of the first part of the story, but the
second. I see. So he's saying that kind of symbolically. Why don't you come? You're afraid you're going to catch something. Yeah, I did hear something about that. He was disappointed that more didn't come, or more didn't take it more seriously. I remember that, hearing something about that.
I can add, rather than just a conspiracy theory, that I know I was in Detroit, and the idea that Prabhupada would actually, we knew he was sick, we were in big anxiety, but the idea that Prabhupada would actually leave, although it was completely logical, but many of us just never computed the idea that somehow or other Prabhupada would not leave. It's just foolish to think like that. But I can say to a large degree, there was just a general mood amongst the devotees that just the idea of the world without Srila Prabhupada just didn't compute. So we must go on.
Well, in New York, we were told not to go to continue our service.
That I don't know. I just know what I was experiencing in the Midwest. That may be true, people said.
Yeah, I think there was some legitimate controversy about some who could have gone who didn't go, maybe like that, and there were people that wanted to go and maybe that weren't allowed to go, things like that happened, I'm sure. I remember what Prabhupada wrote now in that purport, where he said that he's old with rheumatism. He said that my death is imminent, and because he said it so many times, I mean, that's written down in a book in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, but he said it's recorded in lectures and letters. I'm an old man. He used to say things like that, and I'm, my big anxieties is that I want my movement to go on after I leave, and I could die at any moment. He used to say it so much. So there was that kind of sense that Prabhupada would be satisfied if we just, you know, went on with our service rather than all of a sudden everybody go to Vrindavan, so, you know, that service wouldn't go on. There was that feeling I remember I had also, that, you know, I'll just be here. But obviously Prabhupada did want devotees to come and to be with him and to experience with him the passing and to be there as his disciples as well. So I remember I felt like Bhadra Narayan did, that I just not only, well, I not only couldn't imagine it, but I didn't want to think about it. I sort of didn't allow myself. I forced myself not to think about it. And I remember just the idea that other people would be initiating after Prabhupada, when that idea first came up, that there would be other people that would initiate. It's just hard to imagine, you know, how. And I thought, well, yeah, there has to be more people initiating. It's just the idea that there could be anything like that. And it was actually hard to think how ISKCON could go on. I used to never allow myself to think. I just thought everything would just fall apart after Prabhupada left. So I used to fear that, and I never used to really think of how it could go on without him. And one of the things that happened after the day after Prabhupada, it was the same day that there was an announcement in the temple, and everybody was really grief-stricken. And I remember walking out of the L.A. temple, and I was really shaken, and a devotee was walking down the street. He wasn't initiated, and he didn't know Prabhupada had passed away. He just was someone I'd seen at the temple, and he walked up to me and said that he wondered if I could give him a jump start in his car. And I thought, I was thinking to myself, that's really strange. And somehow it just didn't fit in, you know, with the mood. But he was just real happy, and somehow we just kind of went through this whole process, and then I just realized that life was really going to go on somehow. And somehow it did. Right?
I don't know if part of the request was aimed in this direction, but the general mood wasn't that Prabhupada was disappointed with his disciples, or with his very loving father. He wanted to be with them.
Yeah, that's true.
Even if there was some grievous mistake, or just, you know, mistaken decision made by, you know, some leader or leaders, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the general report that we got, that sometimes referred to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, that he personally said that he was disappointed in his old age, that there was so much difficulty in the Gaudiya Math. Whereas with Prabhupada, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, he was very pleased that he felt that his movement was in good hands, and that his legacy was going to carry on. I mean, he gave many warnings also that you could spoil everything, but in general he was satisfied, from all the reports I heard, with the quality of his devotees and the condition of ISKCON.
Where was Prabhupada
in Vrindavan? His tomb is there in Vrindavan. It's a big samadhi, we call it a samadhi, and there's a big figure of Prabhupada like this, even larger than this. And when you go in, you see this larger than life Prabhupada, and it's very inspiring to see him. Whenever I see that, and I think of the Guru Vastakam, how the spiritual master puts out the blazing fire of material existence, and I see that big Prabhupada, you really feel that he's really putting out the fire, you know. It's so powerful. Yes.
Prabhupada was sick a few times, sometimes. And then the direction toward the end of Prabhupada was leaving his body. And this happened a few times. When Prabhupada finally was leaving, it just happened like that. And then if you either jumped ship or went to India, or you stayed in this service, it was controversial.
It was a very difficult period. People didn't know what to do. Didn't know whether to go and, you know, somehow get get the money if they didn't have it and just go there no matter what, or please Prabhupada by staying there and fulfilling his mission. So, okay, Raj?
I'm sorry. You quoted Lord Chaitanya as not feeling as if he had any love. And this pastime I'll refer to doesn't infer that nobody had love for Srila Prabhupada or whatever, but it just amazes me that sometimes it has been enacted where the disciples, for example, Rasikananda Prabhu, the disciple Shyamananda Prabhu, spread Krishna consciousness throughout Arisa. When he left his body, seven of his disciples who were there, they couldn't bear being without him. They also gave up their life.
Yeah. When Bhagavad gave a very, very nice talk, I don't know if it's available on tape, but I heard it because I wasn't there either, describing what it was like to be at Prabhupada's passing. And it's very, very well done. You feel like you're there when he speaks. And he said when, at the moment that Prabhupada left his body, he chanted, he was saying Hare Krishna, and he just said like that. And he said at that moment, he said, everyone felt that Prabhupada entered into their hearts. So beautifully said. And I think it's true. I think everybody actually felt that way. But at the same time, it was unbearable. I mean, it was like the, what is it, the chutney that's too sweet to resist and too hot to bear. It was like that. There was chanting and there was crying. And nobody wanted to leave.
I always think of the philosophy or the two types of association about being young. Is the person that age and the person that have never had any direct association with Srila Prabhupada. You can actually experience the association in these books and preach, you can actually pretend as good as present, so to speak. So it seems like actually the enemy left is still here.
Yeah. Once Vishnu John asked Prabhupada, don't you miss your spiritual master? Once he was reading the Bhagavatam and he held it up to his head and he said, my spiritual master and I are never any further apart than this. And actually it was obvious that Prabhupada felt that it was his spiritual master was by his side at all times. And sometimes I try to think like that about Prabhupada just because, I don't, but I try. And that really helps because he's actually there. And as he says at the end of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the Vani is greater than Vapu, as you mentioned. It's actually greater intensity of feeling of the presence of the spiritual master. Okay. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.